Hello. This is the Winchester and District Talking newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 13th of July, 2012. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Tom and Vara Williams. Your readers today are Jean Carswell.
Hello.
Brian Woodruff, who will be with us very shortly, and Pam Tilbury.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Tom Williams. Now, this week's announcements, and we start with What's On. Here are several events in and around Winchester in the next few days. There are two summer displays of Mottis font from the 14th of July to the 16th of September. The first, entitled Wind in the Willows, is inspired by the Kenneth Graham classic and includes 32 hand-coloured illustrations by E.H. Shepherd. The second, called Worn to be Wild, displays contemporary costumes inspired by nature. Locally, on Tuesday the 17th of July, there's a lunchtime concert at Winchester Cathedral at 1 p.m. by the County Youth Wind Band. There will be a retiring collection. On the same day, Tuesday the 17th of July, from 6 to 8 p.m, there's a workshop on family history for beginners at the Hampshire Record Office. This costs £10 and booking is essential from 01962 864 154. That's 01962 864 154. And again on Tuesday the 17th of July at 6:30 p.m, there is a conference on renewable energy at the West Downs campus of Winchester University. All are welcome, but booking is essential from 01962 872 083. That's 01962 872 083. Gardens next week open under the National Gardens Scheme are every Wednesday and Thursday and Friday in July, Passford House, Lymington. On Wednesday the 18th of July, Appletree House, Station Road, Soberton, The Stables, Biston, Ringwood, and White Barn, Woodend Road, Crow Hill. Thursday the 19th of July, Tanglefoot Crawley and the Old Rectory, Swarriton, Olsford. And Friday the 20th of July, Mottisfont Abbey. For those who are interested, Mitchell Dever Village Fete is on Saturday the 21st of July. And at the Everyman Cinema this week, you can see The Amazing Spider-Man. Lighting Up Time ends on Friday the 13th of July at 5:07 a.m. and begins at 9:17 p.m. On Wednesday the 18th of July, it ends at 5:30 a.m. and begins at 9:11. The main headlines this week are Torch Lights Up City, New Super School Moves a Step Closer, and Silver Hill Out of Date, Out of Tune, says FOE. So may we now have the story behind the first headline, please, Jean.
Torch Lights Up City. Thousands turn out in Winchester and Kingsworthy to see Relay. A once-in-a-lifetime event that will never be forgotten. Normal life temporarily ground to a halt in Winchester yesterday, Wednesday this is, when the Olympic torch passed through, carried in relay by 13 people. Tens of thousands of onlookers lined the city streets to catch a passing glimpse of the flame. Offices, schools and other workplaces were empty as people took the chance to be a part of a unique event. Starting in Kingsworthy, the torch passed down Worthy Lane and Hyde Street, before turning left onto North Walls and around via King Alfred's statue to the High Street. After pausing at the cathedral, it was carried out of the city on Andover Road, stopping for a lunch break at Osborne School, before completing its journey at Park Road. Then it was whisked off to the next leg in Andover. Three of the torchbearers are local to Winchester. Andrew Bennett, 58, of Oliver's Battery Road, Selina Shawnee, 30, of Alsford Road, running in memory of her husband, Sandeep, and Kirsty Nash, 18, of Fleming Place, Colden Common. The numbers lining the streets, thankfully free of rain, were the largest since 1994, when crowds 6 or 7 deep saw the Tour de France whiz through on a gloriously sunny day. The torch relay moved on to the Isle of Wight, New Forest and Southampton on Saturday, July the 14th. City Council leader Keith Wood said it was important Winchester was part of the torch route. He said, "It's very important that the torch should go through the ancient capital of England. It's part of a summer where we have several festivals, so it's a great opener for what we are doing for the rest of the summer." Traffic delays occurred around the city, with several roads closed, but Councillor Wood said this was a price worth paying for such a major event. Chris Turner, Executive Director of Winchester Business Improvement District, BID, said the torch would boost trade. He said, "We think between 30,000 and 50,000 people came to the city, and that will have an impact. We plan to do a survey to measure the economic impact to see how much of a difference it will make." Miss Nash, one of 13 who carried the torch in Winchester and Kingsworthy, said the importance of the occasion had only sunk in last week. Kirsty, a carer for her older sister, who has cerebral palsy, speaking before the day, said, "I got my special kit last week, and that's when it really sunk in. I ran around the cathedral, and I think it's a great place to carry the torch, as it is such an iconic part of Winchester. It's probably something I will be telling my grandchildren about in years to come, and something I will always remember." The torch was even greeted with a specially written song in Hyde Street at around 1:30 p.m. The Hyde 900 Olympic Torch Choir gave the first performance of "Welcome Torchbearer," written by Hampshire Poet Laureate Brian Evans-Jones and local composer Henrietta Wentworth Stanley. Steve Marper, chairman of Hyde 900, said, "Ever since the 12th century, Hyde has been associated with great public street processions and celebrations. We were delighted that we could maintain this tradition by welcoming the Olympic torch on this special day." Sergeant Jeff Bird of Winchester Police said more police than usual were on the streets to make sure everything ran smoothly. He said, "We just wanted to ensure everyone had a nice time. Thousands of children missed school, but with permission from their teachers. Schools were technically open, but allowed children to be absent with permission from their parents."
New super school moves a step closer. First county run school for 4s to 16s. £10 million plan includes school expansions. County education chiefs have backed creating a new super school in Winchester to tackle shortage of places. The radical plan to change the Westgate into the first county-run school for pupils aged 4 to 16 comes after public consultation. The council also proposes long-term expansion of St Peter's Catholic Primary in Oliver's Battery and Winnall Primary School as part of a £10 million scheme to create hundreds of extra school places. Winchester City has among the biggest squeeze on places in Hampshire, with nearly 1 in 5 missing out on their first choice primary school, even with temporary classrooms creating extra places in September 2012. In the public consultation, people asked for their views on either building a two-form entry primary school on the site of Rotherley Boarding School at the Westgate School, or expansion of 5 primaries at All Saints, Hairstock, St Peter's, Weston and Winnall. More than 230 written responses were received. County chiefs admit the majority of responses from schools preferred expansion rather than building a new school. However, a report by Chris Holt, head of schools organisation, recommends building a new 420-place primary at the Westgate, plus expanding St Peter's and Winnall. Meanwhile, Week School will see temporary classrooms replaced with a permanent expansion, although it will not take any extra pupils. The move means all primary school catchment areas in the city will have to be redrawn. The recommendations will be considered by Councillor Roy Perry, Executive Member for Children's Services, who will make the final decision on Tuesday next, the 17th of July. Councillor Perry said, "I will be looking closely at all these responses over the next week and make up my mind. I wish to emphasise that although the report contains a recommendation from officers, it is only a recommendation and that does not mean a decision has been made." In his report, Mr. Holt said creating a combined school for pupils aged 4 to 16 created an opportunity for Winchester and Hampshire County Council to lead the way in forward-thinking education provision. Temporary classrooms have already been sited at All Saints, Hairstock, Weston and Winnall to create an extra 74 places in 2012 and 2013, and the IT suite at St Peter's is being converted into a staff room and internal changes made to create a new classroom. Under the Council's proposals, a new £7.75 million primary school will be built on the Rotherley site by September 2014. The Council is currently consulting on closing the boarding house, although the nursery will remain. Under the plans, Winnall will expand from 140 place to a 210 place school, with a £960,000 earmarked for two new classrooms, library space, staff room and accessible toilet. Some £1.3 million has been set aside to create three new classrooms, drama and music rooms at St Peter's, which will increase from a 315 to a 420 place school. Other plans include spending £400,000 on improvements to All Saints, Hairstock and Weston schools. Meanwhile, four temporary classrooms at recently expanded Week are to be replaced with the permanent buildings at a cost of £1.6 million. And £1.25 million is in the Council's budget to expand Kingsworthy to a two-form entry.
Silver Hill. Out of date, out of tune, says the FOE. Objectors have a say as the inquiry closes. Winchester City Council was criticised over its handling of the £135 million Silver Hill scheme at the public inquiry last week. Developer Henderson Global Investors and the City Council are seeking to compulsory purchase land needed for the project, although several landowners are objecting. Mary Cook, barrister for rival developer London and Henley and other businesses, said the council had not given her client a chance to put a competing proposal forward and instead signed a confidential exclusivity agreement with previous developer Thornfield. She said the City Council deliberately and secretly locked London and Henley out of any discussions over land. The manner in which my client was treated beggars belief. The amount of attempts to belittle and besmirch London and Henley over the last 10 years is an unedifying spectacle. If the scheme could be redesigned, it would be viable. Winchester is a special place and deserves special treatment. Meanwhile, Winchester Friends of the Earth argued the scheme was too large and unsuitable given the current economic climate. Speaking for the group, Chris Gillam said, "We have no quarrel with the proposition that Silver Hill is an area in dire need of improvement, but we are not of the view that a grand project is an appropriate way of treating a town that has arisen over centuries by piecemeal development. This scheme is already out of date and out of tune. We cannot see how a scheme conceived in the 1990s is appropriate to a world that fundamentally changed in 2007. The inquiry also heard from the King Edward VI Foundation, which owns the Sainsbury Building in Middlebrook Street, and also objected to the scheme over fears it would damage its income. The foundation regards the property among the three most valuable in its portfolio and leases it to the supermarket for around £269,000 per year. John Collins, secretary to the foundation board, said the loss of annual revenue to the foundation, which runs eight schools in Birmingham, could not be compensated with a one-off payment. He said the loss of such a primary investment to the foundation will seriously damage its ability to support its schools. Winchester comprises 12% of our portfolio and provides long-term secure income. The foundation wishes the site to be excluded from the CPO because of the significant impact of the loss of the site and the consequential reduction in revenue. But David Elvin, QC, barrister for the City Council, argued the foundation could do more to find alternative properties. He said, if you were to give this a greater degree of priority, and if greater efforts were made, given the imminence of the CPO, then it might throw up more opportunities and add a greater degree of urgency to your search. The inquiry finished last Friday, but was temporarily adjourned to confirm Sainsbury's withdrawal of its objection. If Sainsbury's changes its position, the inquiry will resume in September to hear evidence from witnesses. Once the withdrawal is confirmed, Planning Inspector Christine Thorby will consider the case and make a recommendation to Eric Pickles, Secretary of State for Communities and Local Government.
That concludes the headlines, and we continue with death notices. The following deaths have been announced. Butler, David Butler, at Royal Hampshire County Hospital after a short illness, aged 70. Farrell, Christopher William Farrell, suddenly in France, aged 33. Fernley, Roger Fernley, aged 67. Fletcher, David Michael Fletcher, suddenly in hospital, aged 36. Freeman, Alistair Kenneth Freeman, peacefully at home, aged 91. Gates, Geoffrey Gates, peacefully, aged 72. Hayward, Herbert Hayward, peacefully at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 85. Hurst, Robert Thomas Lawrence Hurst, aged 75. Mayor, Nigel David Younger Mayor, peacefully at Countess Mountbatten House. Moore, Keir Moore. Redding, Elsie Rose Redding, peacefully aged 96. Savage, Margaret Savage, peacefully at Royal Bournemouth Hospital, aged 74. Seymour, Edna Margaret Seymour, suddenly at home, aged 86. And Winstanley, Valerie Frances Winstanley, peacefully at home, aged 51. Christian comment this week is read by Jean. Thank you, Jean.
And this week it's written by Mary Gray, and headed Torchbearers for Peace. And so the torch has at last come to Winchester. Those proud bearers of the flame through our city yesterday were part of an ancient Greek tradition dating back to the 8th century BC. Then, for the duration of the games, a sacred flame burned continually on the altar of the goddess Hera. Heralds were summoned to travel throughout Greece to announce the games, declaring a sacred truce. The flame, delivered to the host country, was transferred from one torchbearer to another, spreading the message of peace, unity and friendship. Now it will end its journey as the last bearer lights the cauldron at the Olympic Games opening ceremony in the Olympic Stadium, and will be extinguished on the final day. The Olympic truce symbolised by the flame is also a sacred tradition. It means either laying down of arms or even a holding of hands, and was announced before and during the Olympic Games to ensure athletes and spectators could travel safely to Olympia and then peacefully return. During the truce period, wars were suspended, armies were prohibited from threatening the games, legal disputes were stopped, and death penalties were forbidden. And this idea was revived in 2000. For Christians, the idea of spiritual life as combat was inspired by St. Paul. He knew well cities like Athens and Corinth and the excitement that the games brought to the people. So though he struggled against Greek paganism, he was keen to make use of popular symbols to describe Christian life. When he said, near the end of his life, "I have fought the good fight, I have finished the race," he meant that the whole of life was to be seen as a spiritual combat for the good, to attain the crown of salvation. Sport and the celebration of the games can also be seen as a metaphor for all the other good things we strive for, not least friendship, mutual support, and fair play. Because of the truce tradition, sport gives a way to set aside other differences, to compete without conquest, and to find in the triumphs and exertions of sport a window to international cooperation, the creation of community and shared celebrations. Even failure teaches how to cope with disappointments. The interruption of violence is itself worth celebrating and may inspire us to greater commitment to peace. Sport and the Olympic Games will not impose peace, but they might inspire it, said Dr. Konstantinos Filis, director of the International Olympic Truce Centre. We will harness this inspiration to create dialogue, to allow humanity to imagine peace, inspired by sport. St. Paul would fully agree.
Now we move to letters to the editor, and the first letter is read by Brian. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Tom. This is from Freddie Crabb and is entitled, "Are We Stuck with the Silver Hill Scheme?" "Sir, I was delighted to see Silver Hill on the front page July the 5th, but also afraid it marks the impending defeat of objectors who do not have the financial resources of a council that purports to represent the people, or of those who, in one way or another, hope to make a financial gain from the project, win or lose. So I ask, why do we bother? Why does the council persist with this scheme that's met so much opposition? I believe we're all entitled to an explanation. Is it a personal scheme purely to satisfy egos? Is it a case of getting stuck in tram lines and having no place to turn off? Is it a potential nice little earner that has taken longer than expected, but we are stuck with? As a lifelong planner, mainly in logistics, I learn plans need to be reviewed from time to time in case something has changed. May I ask our planners if they have done that, or are they stuck and don't have the courage to admit it?" And that's from Freddie Crabb of Hensting Lane, Uzzlebury.
My first letter comes from Anne Quick. The headline is, "Hanging Baskets, No Blooming Good." "Sir, my husband and I would like to endorse Mr. Bloomfield's letter of June the 28th, stating his dismay at the very poor quality of this year's hanging baskets in the city. Over the previous several years, these baskets have been fabulous, in bloom from early summer right through to early autumn, making this year's effort nothing more than an apology. In his reply of July the 5th, the executive director of BID defends their choice of supplier by stating that in his opinion, the baskets are now starting to look splendid and would last right through the Olympics. Let us hope he is right, but at the same time, we trust that for 2013, the BID will contact the previous supplier in the hope that they will be offered the contract, ensuring that Winchester's floral display will once again be of the quality we had become accustomed to. And that's from Anne Quick, Oliver's Battery, Road South, Winchester.
We can all do our bit to preserve our vanishing wildflowers, says Susan Dix. Sir, I recently attended Hampton Court Flower Show and heard John Craven talk about the importance of preserving our vanishing wildflowers. There are few wildflower meadows left, but Hampshire's verges and even roundabouts do support many flowers, even the now rare purple clover. However, thoughtless mowing by local authorities helps to destroy our precious heritage, while tidy-minded residents cut down grasses and wildflowers along the roadside outside their properties. Please give our wildflowers a chance and leave something for our grandchildren and children to enjoy. We are all dependent on the bees that feed on cultivated flowers and wildflowers in our gardens, and we should be careful to leave pathways so that they can travel around. If they do not survive, then ultimately neither will we. Farmers can claim subsidies for leaving pathways around their fields so wildflowers can grow and thereby encourage bees. We should all be doing our bit. Finally, I would remind everyone that it is an offence to pick wildflowers and grasses without the permission of the landowner. Susan Dix, Mrs. Titchbourne Down, Alsford.
And George Suarez Smith writes how Winchester is lowering standards. Walking around Winchester last week, I've been shocked to see the removal of some of the city's most historic lampposts. Opposite the entrance to Wolvesey Castle, a cast-iron swan-necked Victorian lamppost has been replaced with a plain modern pole right in the heart of the city's conservation area, and many more are planned to be scrapped around Winchester and the surrounding villages in the coming weeks. I'm told this is part of a Hampshire-wide programme of standardising street lighting, but I find it extraordinary that such important parts of our heritage are not better protected. And that's from George Smith, Ranelagh Road, Winchester.
This letter comes from Cheryl Barge, headed No Rush to Fill Empty Premises. Sir, I refer to Councillor Robert Humby's letter of June the 21st, in which he stated that retailers were queuing up for empty premises in the city. There doesn't seem to be much evidence of this. In recent weeks, Pastimes, Clinton's and Thomas Cook have left the High Street. They are just a few of the many, and you only need to look at the Brook Centre, which to my knowledge has never been at full capacity, to see Winchester has a serious problem in retaining traders. Perhaps Councillor Humby could explain his statement, because it seems that retailers are definitely not queuing up to fill the vacant properties. And that comes from Cheryl Barge, Burnett Close, Week, Winchester.
Waste Plant Plan is commercial venture, says Malcolm Wright. Sir, Mr. Gagg, letters July the 5th, says the proposed waste plant is in the right place at Mitcheldever because the plant is an aerobic digester and will deal with organic waste from farms. Organic waste from farms? Mr. Gagg must live in the city, because there's none. The fact is, only part of the plant is an anaerobic digester, so most of the waste will be sealed or burned, to be precise. The plant will only deal with commercial and industrial waste, wood, paper, plastic, while the anaerobic digester will deal with material from restaurants, food stores, food production. The developers don't know where the waste will come from, but do say it will come from up to 50 miles away, which sounds like cities to me, and where it should be built. The county's minerals and waste core strategy identified the need for plants of this type to stop landfill sites being used. Unfortunately, that poor strategy does not identify where that waste comes from, nor how and where it should be dealt with. Winchester City Council has identified the need for thousands of new houses. Bad enough, but necessary, though there would be riots in the street if we allowed them to be built anywhere. Mr. Gagg thinks this waste plant is to deal with waste from the surrounding area, but the facts are it will not. If it was for local waste, with benefits from profits to reduce rates, I'd build it myself. Perhaps an idea for the City Council? No, this plant is a private venture to deal with commercial and industrial waste from cities, funded by the green tax on electricity bills. Malcolm Wright, Winchester City Councillor, South Wanston.
And Harvey Cole writes, still more evidence of climate change. Sir, since you published a letter from Mr. Brockless on June 21st, evidence on climate change has continued to appear. A US government report showed that sea ice in the Arctic has been melting faster than ever and was 318,000 square miles less at the end of June than the previous low in 1979. The temperature of the Arctic is rising twice as rapidly as other oceans. Lex Tillerson, chief executive of the oil giant Exxon, long a leading sceptre of climate change, announced that he now believes that it is real and potentially dangerous. More of the world's largest mining companies have joined the rush to extract from the Arctic, as have almost all the leading oil and gas producers. Shipping companies have well-advanced plans to reroute freight from Europe to China and Japan through the increasingly ice-free Arctic, saving 4,000 miles and millions of gallons of fuel. While these activities raise serious environmental problems of their own, the companies behind them would not be planning to spend billions of dollars without strongly believing in the underlying science. Meanwhile, reports multiply of fish, birds, insects, mammals, as well as grasses, crops and other plants steadily migrating north as their present habitat becomes less friendly. What does Mr. Brockless make of all this? Or does he dismiss it as more false evidence invented by corrupt climate scientists to protect not their particularly well-paid jobs? And that's from Harvey Cole of Clifton Road, Winchester.
This letter on the same subject comes from Frank Adsett. The headline, Wind Turbines Can Cut CO2 Emissions. Sir, I write in response to recent letters from Mr. Brockless and Mr. Wright expressing scepticism regarding climate change and wind farms. Mr. Brockless says wind turbines result in production of more total CO2 because they need backup from conventional sources. Not so. Most of our electricity comes from baseload fossil fueled and nuclear stations. And when wind turbines operate, their outputs displace a portion of that from fossil-fueled stations and, as such, act as fuel savers, reducing CO2 emissions. He adduces evidence that there has been no global warming for at least 12 years. Average global temperatures do vary over time in a cyclical manner, but 12 years does not show the larger picture. Mankind's emissions of CO2 have soared since the start of the fossil-fueled industrial revolution. Over centuries, average temperatures have tracked upwards following the rise of CO2 levels in the atmosphere. The findings of the world's climate scientists and the UN's IPCC confirm global warming, and I find it appalling that Mr. Brockless can dismiss these as junk science. World governments, including our own, have accepted these findings and are committed to tackle global warming. Mr. Wright agrees that climate change and unsustainable impact on ecosystems are largely due to the increase in human population. This is surely the key to the problem. Not only are populations rising, but also their aspirations to emulate Western lifestyle and consumption. In our business-as-usual pattern of energy from fossil fuels is replicated globally, we will accelerate climate change and its likely irreversible impact. The depletion of fossil fuels will drive up costs, leading to tension between consuming nations. The adoption of renewable energy sources, coupled with improving energy efficiency, are ways of reducing mankind's detrimental carbon footprint on our planet. In addition to reducing emissions, renewable energies are free at source, provide security of supply, and mitigate the effects of inflation. And that comes from Frank Adsett, Manor Road, Durley.
And here are two short letters which might amuse you. The first one is from M. Bidwell, and he heads it Cull of Nature. Mr. Brockless gets rather a rough ride for his position on global warming, letters July the 5th. Perhaps his undoubted polemical talents would be useful to the NFU on the topic of badger culling. His name, at least, would be an asset. M. Bidwell, Clifton Road, Winchester. And the second, from Martin Taylor, is Black is Black. Sir, I refer to your article B&B Plan for City, June the 28th. Whilst I can see the need for good quality accommodation near the city centre, I was rather hoping that Mr. Nicholson, proprietor of the Black Boy and Black Rat, might open an undertaker's on the Wharf Hill site, if only to be able to call it the Black Death. Martin Taylor, Mill Lane, Abbotsworthy.
Looking back, we begin with news from 200 years ago. Thank you, Brian.
And that is 1812. On the morning of July the 6th, the peaceful village of Newtown near Plymouth was thrown into confusion by the report of three pistols at the house of Mr. Hine, flour merchant. The neighbours rushed in and, horror to relate, found dead in the kitchen Mr. Hine, shot through the heart, his youngest child with its throat cut, his eldest child with his brains beaten out. Upstairs lay Mrs. Hine, shot diagonally through the body, speechless and dying. No reason can be assigned for this unhappy catastrophe, for they were considered to be a happy couple. And the second is, the play with which Mrs. Siddons took leave of the public last night was Macbeth. In none of her performances does she so display that powerful talent for the delineations of the lofty passions of the soul than in Lady Macbeth. The superiority which an ambitious woman obtains by her address over the mind of a man she seduces into guilt was delineated by her in the first two acts, with an art so perfect and with such a strength of colouring as to make the most forcible impression on the audience.
Well, it's 100 years ago, 1912. At Winchester Crown Court this week was an action in which Kate Gregory of Micheldever claimed compensation from William Frederick Hillary, a thrashing tackle proprietor of Micheldever, for the loss of her husband. The sum of £118.10 had been paid into court by the defendant in settlement of the claim. The claimant has six children, and her husband was injured when working for the defendant with thrashing tackle in January 1911 and died in hospital in March 1912 as a result of his injuries, which were caused by his being run into by a passing motor and knocked under the wheels.
And 50 years ago, in 1962, further opposition to Britain's entry into the common market was expressed at a meeting of the Horticultural Committee of the Hampshire Farmers' Union on Monday. A resolution from the Swanwick branch suggested, in view of statements made on this country's entry into the common market, and in view of the fact that there are no apparent safeguards for the agricultural industry, the NFU should now fully oppose entry and should press the government to make this issue the subject of a national referendum. And secondly, with the opening of their new self-service butchery department, International Stores in Winchester High Street will be the first shop in the city to provide one-store shopping for the housewife, enabling her to select her provisions, green groceries, fruit, meat and groceries from the shelves of the one-service store. Excellent new butchery equipment has been installed and skilled staff engaged. The meat will be cut, weighed, priced and pre-packed daily on the premises.
And right up to date, almost, in 25 years ago, 1987, Hampshire Social Services Committee last week attacked what they saw as cuts in the services of departments giving people in the county crazy and madness were the two words used by one councillor, Mrs. Irene Candy. Significant changes have been identified and resulted in a net reduction of £330,000, reached by, inter alia, charges in methods for dealing with young offenders, closure of two children's homes, facilitating savings in out-county placements, and a reduced level of staff and approved workers at sheltered workshops. And the second part piece is Hampshire police officers are to be trained in the use of plastic baton rounds. They will not be expected to fire them, but training will help them understand what firing plastic bullets is like if they're engaged in helping another force. The police authority approved a request by the Chief Constable, Mr. John Duke, for the purchase of two baton round dischargers and ammunition.
Hampshire Chronicle comment this week is read by Pam and will be followed by First Person read by Brian. Thank you, Pam.
Thank you. The headline is A Glorious Occasion for All to Witness. For a city no stranger to staging spectacular events, this was something special indeed. Thousands of people took to the streets of Kingsworthy and Winchester to witness the Olympic torch relay pass through the city. It was a great honour for Winchester to be included on the relay route and a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to see Olympic history in the making. But for Andrew Bennett, Selena Shaughnessy and Kirsty Nash, the trio of local torchbearers, the event was extra special. And it was Miss Nash who aptly summed up the sense of occasion. "It's probably something I will be telling my grandchildren about in years to come, and something I will always remember. It was an occasion to remember for all who witnessed it." The timing of the torch relay through Winchester created major logistical problems for the Hampshire Chronicle, which usually goes to press at lunchtime on Wednesday. Reporters, photographers and sub-editors were in a race against time to bring our readers the best coverage we could, given the time restraints.
And First Person this week is Khalid Aziz, and it says, Bob sets a bad example. 15 years ago, and a fresh-faced Oxbridge graduate in his mid-20s is regaling me about his city job. It's bonkers. Where else can you earn this kind of money? He exuded embarrassment that it was wrong for him, a few years out of university, to be drawing down an annual salary measuring in hundreds of thousands. But he fought these negative feelings courageously and was soon thrilling us with talk of even bigger deals, resulting in even more stupendous bonuses. Trebles all round. After all, we had amongst us someone who was more than able to pay. Fast forward to last month, and an old school friend of mine tells me of his son, graduated 2 years ago and taken on as a trainee in one of the big banks. He wanted so much to be a dealer, worked hard and impressed. At the tender age of 23, he too was looking at a six-figure salary, but his conscience got the better of him. He didn't like the way they talked about their customers inside the bank. This disdainful approach was translated to even more cynical and devil-may-care dealings with their customers. When his boss began to treat him in the same way, our youngster took him into a private room and announced that he was leaving, as he could no longer countenance such a cavalier approach to customers and staff alike. As I write, Barclays boss Bob Diamond has just announced his resignation, a little slow off the mark and resulting in the shambles of the previously resigned chairman, Marcus Aegis, being reinstated pro tem to find Diamond's successor. Politicians are predictable, jockeying for political edge, rather than getting down to fixing the problem, and no doubt by the time you read this there will have been more shenanigans, some as a result of Diamond's scheduled appearance before the parliamentary committee. In all this, one point has been missed. For those of us trying to grow our small and medium-sized businesses, the SMEs which are supposed to get the country out of the mire, the banks have not only dealt a series of blows by failing to lend, except where they can tuck us up at a vast cost with personal guarantees and expensive derivative-inspired hedging arrangements, but have sucked the lifeblood out of business. Why? Because by any logic, the two aforementioned youngsters arguably should have been working for the banks at all, but bringing their intelligence and youthful energy to bear in sustainable businesses represented in so many SMEs. But they were seduced by the big and ultimately, as the events of recent weeks have demonstrated, dishonest money. As a result, many young graduates are turning their backs on all business and opting to work for not-for-profit operations. So SMEs are missing out again. Thanks, Bob.
And now we continue with items of general news, and the first item is read by Jean. Thank you, Jean.
And I'm going to start with one about the Winchester Hat Fair. Winchester Hat Fair was dealt a heavy financial blow last weekend after being forced to cancel two headline shows due to the bad weather, writes Joseph Curtis. Both Saturday and Sunday night's closing acts were called off, although performers were still paid undisclosed sums due to contractual agreements. It meant the Hat Fair lost out on around £8,000 in revenue that could have been collected at the fair, according to artistic director Kate Hazel. Square Peg Circus cancelled its Sunday night show Rhyme at River Park because conditions were too wet to perform stunts. It followed Saturday night's headliner Waterlitz, a 60-foot tower of shipping containers being axed on Thursday on safety grounds after severe weather warnings from the Met Office. Ms Hazel said, "Not having those acts has dented our public fundraising and we have to look at ways of recouping those costs. We hope it will not have an impact on next year, but it depends on whether we're able to recoup that money. But we will be looking at ways to meet our fundraising needs throughout the year, and we are potentially looking at having more events outside the Hat Fair, including something at Christmas." She added, "The show must always go on, and I'm very confident we will be back with a great show next year. The weather is part of the risk of what we do, and we might have to look at staging more events indoors next time to develop things we can do during bad weather." Ms Hazel said, "The festival had gone well, in general, despite the cancellations of the bigger acts." She said it was wonderful on Sunday when we had some sunshine at last for our family day. "We had thousands at Oram's Arbour and there were lots of smiling faces. It was heartening to see so many people were here in spite of the bad weather. The people were there and the show must go on for them." Professor Chris Turner, Executive Director of Winchester Business Improvement District, BID, said the Hat Fair was excellent for hotels, bars and restaurants in the city because it brings in so many people. He said, "We expected 35,000 people to come here over the weekend and lots of hotels were booked up. But the best thing is people come to see the Hat Fair and they stay here, they eat and drink here and they like it and come back later."
Public have say over huge wind farm plans. Members of the public had the chance to view plans for a huge wind farm which could be built north of Winchester. The consultation at Whitchurch Parish Hall gave the people the opportunity to question representatives from EDF Energy Renewables, which wants to build up 17 turbines near Bullingdon Cross, close to the junction of the A34 and the A303. The turbines would fall within the boundaries of three councils, Winchester City, Basingstoke and Dean Borough, and Test Valley Borough. Plans on display stated that the anticipated electrical output of the turbines could be enough to power around 15,000 homes annually. However, their lifespan is only up to 25 years, after which time the turbines and associated access tracks will be decommissioned and removed. Peter Bedford, a member of the Campaign to Protect Rural England, said, "My first thought is, why does it have to be so big? Always with something like this, you have to weigh up the advantages of renewable energy versus the destruction of the countryside. In my heart, I hate the idea of lovely rural Hampshire being damaged by wind turbines." Around 200 people visited the exhibition. Darren Cummins, onshore wind development manager for EDF, said, "What we want is for people to come in and see what our proposals are so that they can express their opinions and we can take these on board." The exhibition also included 3D software for people to see what the wind farm would look like from their home. Mr. Cummins added, "It helps them to understand the impact of the wind farm. People are mainly concerned about the access. We will help, but put people's minds at rest." EDF is looking to submit a planning application before the end of the year with the hope of building the wind farm in 2013. But not everyone was positive about the plans. Paula Jacobs, 62, from Whitchurch, said, "I think it's going to power a new town in Micheldever. Plans for that have been shelved for a long time, so it will come about. If you look at the landscape, there's nothing there, so they will build around the station. I think it's appalling. There is no infrastructure."
Stars come out to tell the history of the cathedral. A spectacular visual history of Winchester Cathedral, due this autumn, is taking shape. Following auditions in April and May, 40 actors have been cast for Winchester, Chronicles of Light, a look back at the cathedral over the past 1,000 years. The October show is using state-of-the-art technology, video and animation from BAFTA award winner Terry Braun. James Judy Dench, Wendy Craig, David Suchet, Hugh Dennis and Alan Titchmarsh are among those helping to document the history of the cathedral and the city. Stories, events and characters including Jane Austen, King Canute, famed angler Isaac Walton and deep-sea diver William Walker will be brought to life within the ancient interior. Dazzling giant images will be projected and the voices of the many celebrities taking part will be played, while the action on the stage will be carried out by live performers from the city and county, including local schools. The performance features a script by acclaimed writer Philip Glassborough, who wrote The Winchester Passion. Many people from Winchester are involved in the production, with several recruited for front of house and backstage roles. Executive producer Rolly Ream, a cathedral canon, said, "We have a great history, which we want many more to value through this show, but we also want to say the best is yet to come." Cathedral spokesman Simon Barwood said, "There will be great stories in a great building. This has not been done in this way before. We will be using a screen and the architecture of the cathedral to really bring the place alive, to really immerse people coming to see the story of the 1,000 years of the cathedral and the story of those who have lived through those times." Pupils from Winchester schools are also taking part, making one of the props for the play with help from local artist Alex Hoare. Winchester Chronicles of Light runs from October the 12th to the 28th, with tickets on sale at the Cathedral box office. And the telephone number for that is 01962 857 275. 01962 857 275.
County's NHS in excellent shape. The Health Secretary has told patients across Hampshire that their NHS is in excellent shape. Andrew Lansley made the first annual report to MPs on the state of the health service in Parliament last week. There was a 100% drop in MRSA cases reported by Hampshire Hospitals NHS Trust, which runs the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester. At Southampton University Hospital's NHS Trust, the number remained the same, with 5 cases last year. Cases of another superbug, C. difficile, were down by 56.8% in Hampshire in 2011/12. Progress was also reported in stamping out mixed-sex accommodation in hospitals in the region. Mr. Lansley said, "The performance has been excellent, and credit for that goes to NHS staff."
Report shows fall in crime and antisocial behaviour. Crime and antisocial behaviour is down in Winchester, according to council data. A report shows assaults with injury, domestic violence, and a number of first-time youth offenders were all within targets, a city scrutiny committee heard. Although the criminal damage was up by 3% over the year, incidents dropped by 28% in the last 3 months. Sandra Tudderdam, council head of community safety, said, "In the past year, there's been a decrease in assaults with injury. The street pastor scheme has been extremely successful, and there's been a decrease in criminal damage and some types of antisocial behaviour. But council has asked for similar data for similar districts around the county to compare results." Councillor Malcolm Wright said, "I do think it's important that the figures are based against something such as similar places like Salisbury. The problem with this sort of report is that people could look at this and without guidance think Winchester is a bad place to live in." But Ms. Tudenham said results could be misleading when compared against other areas. She said, "Winchester might be doing really well in some areas, but not doing well in others like rural crime, for instance, such as lead theft. Each of the outcomes will differ around the Hampshire depending on the district." She added a bi-monthly bulletin of safety statistics would now be sent to parish councils.
City, a safer place for the vulnerable. Winchester is now officially a safer place for vulnerable people, thanks to a new card scheme. The Safer Places scheme was launched at the Great Hall and protects people from harassment and bullying by providing a safe building to stay in and wait for a family member or a friend. People using the scheme can request a card on which they can put detailed information, such as phone numbers for trusted contacts. They can then take the card to a safe place, which are identified throughout the city by official stickers in windows. More than 100 people attended the launch, which featured a performance from the Blue Apple Theatre, a company for actors with learning disabilities. The County Council, Police, Trading Standards, MP Steve Brine and Winchester Mencap were all on hand to give out information about the scheme. Cards are free and are available through Winchester Mencap and at the Discovery Centre and the Colebrook Centre.
Relief as regiment marches on. Relieved relatives of Hampshire soldiers have joined politicians in welcoming the county's historic army unit being safeguarded from massive cuts announced by the government. Fears had been raised that the 1st Battalion, Princess of Wales Royal Regiment, 1PWRR, which recruits from Hampshire, could be sucked into a super regiment as part of Ministry of Defence cost-cutting moves to axe a fifth of the army. Defence Secretary Philip Hammond revealed last Thursday that 17 major units will go in the biggest overhaul of the service for decades. But Hampshire's battalion, nicknamed the Tigers, was not included in the list of changes On the day, it staged a homecoming parade around Paderborn in Germany, where it is stationed, after returning from a seven-month tour of Afghanistan. Last week, family members of one PWRR soldiers spoke of their joy at the news, although there was a warning that the battalion's soldiers might not be safe from redundancy, as the number of army personnel is cut from 102,000 to 82,000 by the end of the decade. Corinne Crowther from Hedge End, whose 21-year-old son Giovanni served in Afghanistan as a private with 1PWRR, said, "We're absolutely delighted that they're going to be staying together as 1PWRR, because that's what they joined the army to be. It's a huge relief, because it's been a very, very anxious time. They need to know they have a future, especially after what they've been through." Fiona Mason, whose son Paul, 21, is a private, said, "It's good news they're saving them because they're a good, strong unit. But quite a lot of mums are disgusted at how our lads have been treated through this. We were all up in arms because they're fighting for our country, but didn't know anything about what was going on." Lieutenant Colonel James Coote, commanding officer for the Tigers, said the decision was a relief for all in the battalion. He said, "I am, of course, delighted that the Princess of Wales Royal Regiment will endure in its current form. We can now turn our attention to the challenges of training for future operations and in the coming weeks providing force elements to assist with Olympic security. In the meantime, we very much look forward to confirmation of our long-term role and base."
Raistby Police Commissioner, former MP and councillor, first to be elected for prestigious role. A 78-year-old former MP and a Southampton councillor will go head-to-head to become Hampshire's first elected £80,000-a-year police commissioner. Former East Hampshire MP Michael Mates, who comes from Winchester, won the Conservative nomination after a series of members' meetings and an open public vote. Mr Mates said he was delighted and honoured with his selection. He said, "I am very grateful to the several hundred people who turned out to vote at three final meetings. This shows our party cares about this important new post and have taken the selection of their candidate very seriously. My task now will be to engage with the electorate to stress the importance of the election. If the new commissioner is to have the best possible start, he or she needs to achieve a good turnout. I will now be working flat out to be in contact with as many of the electorate as I possibly can with the aim of winning a good majority." He will now face Labour's Councillor Jackie Raymond, Southampton's deputy council leader and a former Hampshire Police Authority chairman, in a November poll. The Liberal Democrats have yet to declare their candidate, while a high-profile independent could also enter the race. Councillor Raymond was unavailable for comment, but after being selected by Labour, she vowed, "I won't stand by and let Tories and Liberal Democrats become cheerleaders for police cuts in Hampshire." Mr Mates became Petersfield MP in 1974 and then represented the East Hampshire constituency between 1983 and 2010. He led the Conservative opposition to the poll tax and was a Northern Ireland minister in John Major's government. Mr Mates beat Portsmouth councillor Donna Jones, 35, for the Tory ticket. Mearn Valley MP George Hollingbury, who coordinated the Conservative candidate selection process, said, "This has been a thorough and successful selection process, which has importantly also involved the public in deciding the outcome. I'm delighted Michael will now be our candidate, and I wish him every success in the election to this very high-profile role later this year." Hampshire County Council Deputy Leader Mel Kendall and Fareham Borough Council Leader Sean Woodward were last month both rejected by the voters at a US-style open primary held to whittle down six Tory candidates to two. The election for the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Police and Crime Commissioner will be held on November the 15th.
Snuff out the snoopers. Campaigners who oppose a snoopers charter, i.e. most of us, have taken the issue to Winchester and Chandos Ford MP Steve Brine. Residents of Winchester handed a copy of a £140,000 signature petition to Mr. Brine at St. Peter's Church in Jewellery Street on June the 15th. The residents are members of 38 Degrees, a campaigning community who scored a big victory last year against government plans to sell off English forests. They are now battling the draft communications bill. Janine Abbess, who organised the meeting, said, "The government wants new powers to invade our privacy every single day. They want to store records on who we call, text and email, and which websites we visit, without any kind of warrant or reason. Our civil liberties take a battering from time to time from the politicians of all backgrounds, but this is way out of line. We have to make a stand."
Council still looking for buyer. A former civic building has remained empty 5 years after being vacated, the City Council revealed this week. Council chiefs have been looking for buyers for Avalon House in Cheshire Street, Winchester, since leaving the premises in 2007. Speaking at a scrutiny meeting on Monday, Council leader Keith Wood said, "We have tried to sell it, let it, and do God knows what with it. It's got to be at a reasonable value so far as the council is concerned, and so far we've not been able to get that." Several organisations, including the former Winchester and Eastleigh Healthcare NHS Trust and Hampshire Community Healthcare Trust, pulled out of deals in the past few years to take over the building. Council Chief Executive Simon Eden said, "It's quite important we go for the right solution rather than just whoever opens their chequebook. But there are discussions going on and we are looking for the right solution."
County Council's boost for rural economies. Hampshire County Council has awarded grants of over £400,000 for rural projects in a bid to boost economic prosperity, encourage more people to visit the countryside, and to ensure that rural communities have the opportunity to develop and thrive. This year, another £200,000 is available for projects from the Council's Rural Delivery Strategy. 9 applications were received through the new electronic grant system, and funding for them agreed by the Executive Member for Economic Development and Rural Affairs on June the 28th. The projects include £35,000 for village agents to improve information for older and vulnerable people, £25,000 to upgrade village halls and other community buildings, £14,000 for an age concern initiative to deliver IT training, and £15,000 to provide better access to the countryside. All funded projects are expected to generate additional funding from other sources to match the grant awarded. Last year, 18 projects received a share of £200,000 funding, attracting total match funding of over £670,000. It is estimated that the County Council funding helped pull in combined investment over £800,000 in rural communities. 11 community-led projects were also awarded funding from the Community Challenge Fund in 2011-12. As the fund proved so popular, the total grants available were increased from £10,000 to nearly £23,000. Councillor Ray Ellis, Executive Member for Economic Development and Rural Affairs, said, "These projects are testing new and innovative ways to deliver rural services and helping communities develop and thrive. The feedback from organisations working in rural communities has been very positive, and future progress will depend on developing new ideas to support our rural communities. As the majority of Hampshire's area is rural, it's vital that we look after the interest of our communities and continue to help support locally generated initiatives wherever we can. All the projects have been very effective in pulling in other sources of funding and enabling communities to unlock resources at local level. This is also important as it ensures the commitment of the local community for the successful completion of the project. The projects for this year will continue to build on that success and ensure that rural communities remain strong and vibrant.
Community remembers Bill Churchard. The Winchester Community Centre held a charity darts tournament last weekend in memory of a popular resident. Wake Community Centre raised £75 at the Bill Churchard 101 Memorial Darts event last Saturday. Mr. Churchard died of cancer last year, aged 74. Centre manager Gemma North said, "A fabulous evening was held by all, was had by all, but after a rough, a fabulous evening was had by all, but after a tough final for the, both the plate and the cup, the winners were Gav Smith and Peter North, respectively. A fantastic £75.50 was raised and given to Bill's wife Rita, and this will be donated to her chosen charity, which we believe will be Leukaemia and Lymphoma Cancer Research."
Council under fire for keeping tenants in dark. Bid to improve communication over housing policy. Civic chiefs have again been criticised for not telling Winchester Council tenants they could lose their homes under new proposals. Several tenants discovered last month their homes might be demolished after the Hampshire Chronicle revealed plans to build 100 new council houses over 3 years. Now councillors have joined residents in criticising a lack of consultation. Speaking at a scrutiny committee meeting on Monday, Councillor Martin Todd said the council should have told residents of the plans more quickly. He said residents of Shared Equity in Bath Place found out the council had put their homes in a plan for council house takeover from the newspaper, which is clearly unacceptable. There's an important question here, which is, can we establish a thorough communications and consultation process with residents? Council tenant Frank Mills of Milland Road, Highcliffe, said, "We think it was very cavalier of the council to have the information in the Hampshire Chronicle before sending out a letter saying what was going to happen. It would be appropriate for the council to write to the tenants involved with a letter of apology saying it made a mistake." Council Director Steve Tilbury said information could not be given to the public before it was presented to councillors. He said, "You are damned if you do and damned if you don't. If we talk to the public before we talk to members, then members get upset. To provide information to the public that has not been authorised by members would be jumping the gun and making it look like the council has taken a decision before it has made it." But Council Chief Executive Simon Eden said he would look at ways to improve communication with tenants in the future. He said, "It is a fair point about consultation and I will look at how that was handled. If an apology is due, it will be forthcoming, because you should not have to read about losing your home in the paper before hearing from the council." He added any tenants who did lose their homes would be placed in temporary housing before being given first pick of a home in a new development. The Conservative administration also came under criticism for not delivering enough affordable housing in the past year. Councillor Kelsey Lerney, leader of the Lib Dems, said, "Surely we should be looking at expanding affordable housing throughout the whole of the district. New homes in West Waterlooville will not be fulfilling need in Alsford and Winchester." But council leader Keith Wood said, "We are doing what we can on affordable home delivery, but we are constrained by the market. We will push on with new council homes as quickly as we can."
£3 million in council tax owing. Council tax dodgers in Winchester owe almost £3 million in unpaid bills, new figures show. It is part of £32 million owed to councils across Hampshire, with Winchester City Council coffers missing out on £2.88 million. But the city compares favourably with other authorities in the county, such as Southampton, where the total arrears is £9.1 million. Thousands of people are thought to be behind with their payments, but debts are unlikely to be written off unless in exceptional circumstances, such as a person becoming bankrupt. Christine Melsom, founder of the Hampshire-based Is It Fair, which campaigns for council tax reform, said, "It's a vast amount of money, and I think much of it could be collected if councils pulled their fingers out. Although I do not approve of council tax in its current form, it is the law that people have to pay it. Council tax was introduced in 1993, and much of the debt is thought to date back a number of years."
IT partnership deal will save the taxpayer £400,000. Winchester City Council is pressing on with plans to share IT services with a neighbouring authority. The council is set to link up with Test Valley Borough Council to save spending £400,000 on new equipment. A council scrutiny committee heard the scheme would consolidate both councils' IT services into one centre in Andover, with the City Council's current centre in Colebrook Street acting as a backup. Councillor Stephen Godfrey, portfolio holder for Finance and Administration, said, "By sharing, we can avoid having to buy separate equipment for both authorities and achieve a cost avoidance of £400,000 over the next 5 years. It would not affect how City Council staff access their systems and data, but would mean services would be delivered directly from Andover." Councillor Godfrey added, "If either party wanted to split from the partnership, the City Council would be protected financially."
Prestigious award for man celebrating 50 years at Fir. One of Winchester's leading business figures has celebrated 50 years at his family firm with a top award. Richard Steele, of Funeral Directors Richard Steele and Partners, was given the prestigious Millennium Egg prior to last month's Winchester Business Excellence Awards ceremony. Mr. Steele, who co-hosted the awards at Winchester Guildhall, was presented with the accolade, the equivalent of a lifetime achievement for making a significant contribution to business in the city, by guest speaker on the night, Giles Brandreth. The honour coincided with Mr. Steele's 50th year working in the firm, which has been in Winchester since 1860. He said, "I was extremely honoured when the chief executive of the council phoned me and told me I was receiving the award. I'm honoured that they should consider me worthy. I have been in business here for nearly 50 years in our field, and it's been a privilege to be of some service to the community. I have always felt our field is a vocation as much as a business, and with very little exception, I can say I have never been unhappy to come to work." Mr. Steele is also very active in the community as Chairman of Trustees at St. John's Winchester Charity, Chairman of Winchester Working Men's Housing Society, and President of the Winchester Operatic Society and St. John Ambulance. He added, "At the end of the day, anyone who works in business in the city should be putting something back into the community. My father was on the council for 25 years, but that's not a route I wanted to take, so I chose other activities." The egg was crafted by Jeremy France Jewellers in 2000 and is given by the City Council, Councillor Robert Humby, Deputy Leader and Portfolio Holder for Economic Development, said, "We were delighted this year to make the award to the owner of a very successful independent business, which is Winchester Born and Bred. Not only is the business very much rooted in the local community and successful in its own right, but Richard has made a huge personal contribution to community and civic life. We could do no better this year than to present the Millennium Egg to Richard, wishing him many congratulations on his 50th year with the family firm and thanking him for all he has done to champion the local economy in this time. And there's a very nice picture of the three men, Richard Steele in the middle, Giles Brandreth on the left, and Stephen Tilbury, the corporate director of Winchester City Council, on the right, all in their penguin suits, that is their black tie and dinner jackets, and looking very happy indeed. Giles Brandreth is holding the certificate which says, winner of the Millennium Egg 2012, Richard Steele, of Richard Steele and Partners.
£65,000 church restoration project begins. Work has started on a £65,000 restoration project for Chilbolton Church. Following 2 years of planning, building work has begun at St Mary the Less, which is shown in a photograph on the right of this, which will create an inside toilet and a servitory area. Despite complications in the design of the new toilet, which will be housed within the bell tower room and so must still allow access to the three bell ropes, it is hoped that the project will be finished by October. This will mean that it will not be subject to this year's budget changes of 20% VAT on listed church buildings. Funds for the project were raised through grants, individual donations, and a £20,000 contribution from PCC funds.
Viaduct cycle path to go ahead. Winchester Civic Chiefs have confirmed the building of a new £400,000 cycle path on a disused railway viaduct. The City Council has appointed Avon Construction to construct Route 23 of the National Cycle Network on the Hockley Viaduct following a tender process. It follows the start of essential repairs to the viaduct that began in June, also carried out by Avon. Work should begin on the path and ramps in September or October, with the route scheduled to open in March 2013. The route begins at the South Winchester Car Park, Park and Ride, and leads into the city centre. The cost is shared between the city and the county councils and bicycle charity Sustrans. Discussions are ongoing over the management and lease of the viaduct.
Market back at Cathedral. Hampshire Farmers Market returns to the Cathedral grounds this weekend. Among the local producers on show on Saturday between 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. will be Itchen Valley Brewery, which is bringing a wide selection of bottled beer and ales. Visitors can also buy local meat, eggs, cakes, pastries, and even shrubbery, with everything produced in Hampshire or within 10 miles of the border. Market business manager Alex Handforth said, "Winchester Cathedral Farmers Market offers the opportunity to buy fresh, quality, local produce direct from the producer. Producers will be happy to chat to customers about methods of cooking, and many provide tastings. The market returns to the cathedral again on Saturday, August the 18th.
Peaceful setting. Inspired by a butterfly and leading down to a meadow of wildflowers overlooking a lake, it remembers the life of murdered Hampshire landscape architect Joe Yates. The tranquil memorial garden in Sir Harold Hillier Gardens has been opened to pay tribute to the former Peter Simmons College student Joe, inset above, there's a little picture of her, who worked there when she was living in Hampfield. She came up with a design for a children's butterfly garden, which was never used, so some of her ideas have been incorporated in the design by one of her former colleagues, Phil Deacon, and her former university lecturer, Brodie McAllister. Joe's parents, David and Teresa, who were present at the opening, and there's a lovely picture of them sitting on a seat in the grounds, have also selected a maple tree for the garden and a ginkgo tree. Joe planted herself and has been moved there. Joe, who also attended Sherborne House School in Chandler's Ford, was living in Bristol when she was murdered aged 25 by a Dutch engineer, Vincent Tabak, who was last year jailed for life for the crime.
The wettest June, but hopes for summer? Last month was the UK's wettest June since records began in 1910. And that's said by the Met Office. While the period from April to June was a quarterly record breaker as well. In England, June was the second wettest on record. Trevor Wheeler, who records for the Met Office in North Hampshire, says his measurements confirm this, with 148.1 millimetres recorded this June, compared to the long-term average of just 57 millimetres. Only June 1971 was wetter, when 164 millimetres fell, all in the last 21 days of the month. Mr. Wheeler said the second quarter was the wettest ever, with 322.9 millimetres falling, compared to an average of 173.9. It has made a significant difference to the groundwater here, with one well I measure rising by 18 feet over the period. Usually they would have been falling away at this time. He said that the factor producing all the rain here, the path of the jet stream, is also responsible for the dangerously hot weather in the United States. He isn't given to predictions, but he is hopeful that the path will change in time to give us a taste of summer before too long. June was also the second dullest on record, with 119.2 hours of sunshine. The record of just 115.4 hours was back in 1987.
Dragon Boat Race for Samaritans. Winchester Samaritans are appealing for public support at their major dragon boat raising fundraiser at the Itchen Navigation in St Cross on Sunday. Volunteer Anne Gillott said the event would be fun, but it aims to highlight serious issues such as increasing cases of self-harm among youngsters. She said people don't have to be suicidal to speak to the Samaritans. There will be 16 teams taking part in the race, and a variety of entertainment, including coconut shies, face painting, donkey rides, beer tent, and hog roast. The event in Garnier Road starts at 10 a.m, and for more information, call Anne on 07702 430243. That is 07702 430243.
Run for Alex. Friends of Alex Whatley, the tennis coach who died of sudden adult death syndrome, have run the South Downs Way in his memory. They also hope to raise £2,323 for CRY, Cardiac Risk in the Young, having broken through the £2,000 barrier earlier this week. Alex, pictured of Tichborne Down, Alsford, died of SADS, aged just 23, last December. The 26 runners took it in turns to relay to tackle the 100 miles from Eastbourne to Winchester, where, wearied but proud, they ran together from King Alfred's statue to the Buttercross. One runner, Amy Johnson, said, "It was challenging. It was more difficult than any other SK I'd done, and there are many, many times I wanted to stop. But then I remembered why I was doing it and found the motivation to carry on."
And that concludes our extracts for this week. Thank you to the editors, Tom and Vara Williams. Thank you to our copying and dispatch and studio preparation teams. Thank you to our readers, Jean Carswell.
Goodbye.
Brian Woodruff.
Goodbye.
And Pam Tilbury.
Bye-bye.
And from me, Tom Williams, goodbye. And do enjoy the week ahead. We may possibly see some of you at the garden party on Thursday, the 19th of July. Please post your memory sticks back to us as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. When you put your label in the wallet, please ensure the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside the wallet. Thank you.